And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Grace Under Pressure. Each of my guests is discussing examples of grace under pressure that they've encountered. My first guest looks at ordinary men in extraordinary circumstances as the final American troops pull out of Vietnam in 1975. We discuss the true story of our final hours in Vietnam from his book, Last Man Out. My next guest explains how great leaders bring out the best in themselves and others from his book, Better Under Pressure. And if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Justin Menkes is Managing Director of the Executive Intelligence Group, that's EIG for short, a leading provider of executive assessment services to global corporations. EIG is an exclusive partner of Spencer Stuart, the world's preeminent executive search firm. Justin created the executive intelligence evaluation used by businesses to identify, develop, and hire effective leaders. Justin is internationally recognized for his expertise in managerial assessment and has written for the Harvard Business Review. He lives and works in Los Angeles. Joining us from L.A. is Justin. Hi, Justin. How are you today?
Very good, Bill. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. I love to talk to thought leaders like yourself. And let's just start at the beginning. There's an old expression, we all know it, that under pressure, coal turns into diamonds. And it's really, it's under pressure where greatness is exposed. Now, your book was fascinating to me because you interviewed over 150 CEOs from a variety of industries. So that kind of gives you a unique perspective on leadership. And inspiring and motivating employees used to be the norm, but now it's no longer sufficient for a CEO or any leader to just be able to inspire. And so I guess Peter Drucker's world of leadership has sort of collapsed as a result of that. What paradigm shift is impacting leadership today, and how do you see it happening in the business world?
It's a great question. So I studied under Drucker to get my doctorate in the 90s, and there are certain things that are eternal about being about leadership. And the key differentiator of one that is great versus one that is not so great is and has always been and will always be the ability to get ordinary people able to do extraordinary things. That is the key differentiator. But what has changed since my days with Drucker is the environment. The environment is more complex and more pressured than ever, isn't going away.
And we'll give us some examples of the complexity and the pressures that today's leaders, today's CEOs are feeling that maybe we didn't feel 30 years ago.
Yeah, so I was sitting, the idea for the book came in 06. I was sitting in the boardroom of a large energy company, and we listed the challenges on the whiteboard that faced the company that the next CEO would have to do. So I work for Spencer Stuart's board services practice, and that's what my team does every time is we list out what are the challenges and then what are the attributes the next CEO will have in order to meet those challenges. And if anyone looked at that whiteboard, and I actually opened the book with this story, because you look at the whiteboard and you would not believe what the company was facing, which was, you know, supply lines that were being nationalized by local governments, massive taxes being proposed by customers, and outright replacement of their products by people that were calling it a threat to the environment. So you would think the company was one in trouble, and it is, but it is also one of the most profitable that has ever existed. And it's just sort of coalesced what I see at companies and have been for several years, which is that the new normal is volatility. It is continuous, ongoing complexity and threats to the business that have never existed before.
Wow. Continuous volatility. That's got to create an untold pressure on CEOs. And under pressure, we know that there are certain physiological changes that happen to the human body. Most notably is that big adrenaline surge that you feel. So how do top performers use that adrenaline surge constructively rather than succumb to it? How do they overcome that adrenaline rush?
Yeah, it's so critical. This is so critical for the next generation because complexity and ongoing pressure are not going to go away. But it's not just a crisis that they can white-knuckle their way through. They have to learn how to thrive in an environment of volatility. And they can do that. So you were talking to a guest previously about the military and experiences there. The military showed long ago the critical nature of adrenaline and preparation, how you must help soldiers become used to the sensation of adrenaline in their systems. Because if you do, adrenaline is a huge asset for people that are prepared for the feeling of adrenaline and what it gives them. It becomes an invaluable tool to make extraordinary things happen. Human beings under adrenaline have done the most extraordinary things in history. But if you are not used to the feeling, if you're unprepared, then you feel panic. Adrenaline leads to panic. So the unprepared mind becomes panicked by adrenaline. So today's leaders have to get used to adrenaline, be trained to handle it.
All right. Well, we're talking to Justin Menkes, who's the author of the book Better Under Pressure, How Great Leaders Bring Out the Best in Themselves and Others. And Justin, from your interviews with over 150 CEOs, you've identified several traits that successful CEOs possess. What are those traits?
There are three things that people have to master in order to be effective in today's workplace. And these chief executives not only mastered it, the ones that are in the upper echelon of their industries. It was a little bit more technical in terms of the research. We actually separated on each. And so there was a bit of sort of academic rigor that is explained in the book, not necessarily for the listeners, but just to reassure them that that is there. And what we found was that the difference between those that thrived and those that failed were these three attributes. It was the realistic optimism, which is the ability to stare real threats, danger in the face, and still remain confident that in the end you will find a way through, even if that path is not entirely clear at the moment. The second thing is subservience to purpose. They actually are able to redefine their work in terms of a larger purpose. So, well, one of the things that's happening, I'm in Dallas today, and I'm going to see, I think I mentioned to you, Herb Kelleher at Southwest. He's the founder and CEO, was the CEO, he retired, of Southwest Airlines, but he's still chairman, and he created an organization that sees their purpose as more than just an airline. They see their employees as people who are helping Americans see their family and loved ones at an affordable rate, that not just rich people should be able to go and see their grandchildren. And so when a baggage handler at Southwest is putting a bag on the plane, they see it as not just another suitcase, they see it as someone's insulin, or they see it as a grandmother's present for their, you know, first birthday of their grandson. So redefining work in terms of higher purpose,
okay,
more than just money.
All right. And then what's the third of the three traits?
Finding order in chaos. So complexity is here to stay. You must learn how to find those puzzles and ongoing shifting puzzles, invigorating rather than exhausting.
All right. Now that we've got those out on the table, let me ask you, Justin, and let's take a look at each one of them in a little bit more depth, starting with realistic optimism. So you say that, you know, you've got to be realistic and optimistic at the same time. Let's use an example from history of an audacious goal that was put forth in the 20th century that actually came into being. And the goal that I'm talking about is John F. Kennedy's challenge to go to the moon and back in the 1960s. So how did JFK assess the risks to the United States, and how did he balance the risks that he felt that we were experiencing at that time to make something that he believed was achievable, getting a man to the moon and back by the end of the decade?
It's a good question, and one of the things that I think is a useful lesson, I'm hardly an expert on that incident, but a useful lesson from the sort of often told, you know, mantras from the Kennedy pledge to get to the moon was that he was using a sort of nationalistic mission to bring people together to make sacrifice for the larger good. And he had defined the larger good as the U.S. needs to be the leader in space exploration, but that is critical to our national security and interests. And as Americans, people came together and were willing to pay the price, both in terms of money and expertise, to make it happen. But they came together. It's a very powerful example that you just came up with, Bill, of subservience to purpose.
Well, without a doubt. And that does bring us to the second point, which is subservience to purpose. And within subservience to purpose, you've identified two critical elements there: affiliations that the leader forms based on dedication, and also something that you call effect tolerance. So let's talk about each of those. What about affiliations? If you are subservient to your purpose, how does that impact the affiliations that a leader will have?
a big problem that people elevated into the chief executive role have is that they can often choose their friends over the company, in that they can, they want loyalty, they want trust, it's essential to them. But personal trust is different and less important than trust that the people you have around you are loyal to the purpose and mission of the organization, that they put the mission of the organization first, and that they will work as a collective together to further that. That's what brings these people together and makes them so unified as a team, is that their leader, their chief executive, actually shows that their own personal interest is never more important than that of their company.
All right. Now, what about effect tolerance? What is the effect tolerance, and why is that important to a successful leader?
Yeah, that's, I mean, the ability to manage your feelings. There's a outsized effect that the chief executive, and then really anybody in a position of authority, can have. It's not unlike a teacher in a classroom. It's that you are an authority figure, and your behaviors and your, say, outlashes, if you're frustrated, have an outsized effect. These are not sort of necessarily your peers and equals. When you're the boss, you have a very significant effect. And so to be able to manage your sensations of frustration, or even sensations of grandiosity, that, you know, a lot of leaders get a surge of grandiosity. Any human being vulnerable to that. If you have authority and power, it can cause surges of grandiosity. And these are all feelings that have to be sort of recognized as such and managed.
Well, I think the thing that I took away from that, Justin, that was so important is that you have to manage your setbacks in a constructive way, because there are going to be recurring setbacks no matter what course you set out on, and you need to project a positive, forward-looking image to everybody that you work with. We're talking to Justin Menkes, author of the book Better Under Pressure, How Great Leaders Bring Out the Best in Themselves and Others. And the third characteristic that you talk about, this should be very obvious, but let's drill down on it, and that is finding order in chaos. Talk to me about finding order in chaos.
Yeah, it really is about that joy of the puzzle. One of the great examples of this was, I was talking to Jim Owens at Caterpillar. He was one of the case studies, and he said, "Are you going to see AG at Lapsley, the CEO of Procter & Gamble, next week in Cincinnati?" I said, "Yes," because they're friends. And he said, "Well, ask him if he was in Brazil in March." And I said, "Okay, why?" And he said, "Well, I heard about some crazy gringo CEO down by the river watching housewives do their laundry." It was AG. And so I asked him, and it was. And I said, "Well, AG, what are you doing? Where are you going by the river?" He said, "Well, look, we had a soap that was not selling, so I wanted to understand why." So he actually figured out that the women wouldn't buy the soap because it didn't make suds. And he would never have known that, but this is a CEO. He was in 8 years into his tenure at that point, and he still wanted to be hands-on. I asked him why. He said he finds human beings endlessly fascinating and endlessly unpredictable, and he loves it. And that's the key, that you have to find this ongoing complexity invigorating.
All right. Well, now, here in the ongoing complexity, of course, is where your emotions can rear up. We come back to the adrenaline question that we talked about earlier, Justin. How do you dampen those anxious emotions that rear up, particularly in times of chaos?
Yeah. It's so critical to sort of start without in a situation that you can be successful. It's all about context and preparing yourself. But your point out, Bill, here, I think what is essential is that all three of these characteristics intertwine with one another. So your ability to have realistic optimism is critical to your ability to continue to try and find order in chaos to solve the puzzle. If you don't have that optimism and that sense that you have some control over your destiny, you just have to figure out how and how to do it. These things intertwine. All three of these come together and affect one another. They're not entirely distinct.
All right, Justin. Well, we're talking to Justin Menkes, author of the book Better Under Pressure. Justin, give us some examples of CEOs that possess all three of these characteristics. Who are they? Just some people that you have interviewed from the 150 or so that you did in your study.
There's so many, and I hate calling people out as a single individual. You can see there's 25 profiled in the book. A great example, if it's terribly important. They'll see just one would be Dave Dillon at Kroger. He's quite special, and he clearly has all three of those characteristics. He grew up in the grocery business, and Kroger has dominated the grocery business for a long time, and he actually saved it from threats like Walmart and others by distributing these, displaying these three characteristics.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, Justin, but let me ask a follow-on question if I can. Can a CEO be successful with just one or two of these traits, or do they really have to possess all three to be a super successful CEO or leader?
Yeah, I mean, at the chief executive level, you really need to possess all three, but nobody starts out as a master, even when they're made a CEO. What we're looking for, I'm a psychologist, and I'm asked to look for next-in-line talent and what people need to develop in order to be ready for the CEO position when it comes up. And these characteristics, what we're looking for are the seeds of it, that someone can become a master of them, but they rarely come into the chief executive position already a master. I've actually never seen that. It takes time.
It does. We've been talking to Justin Menkes, author of the book Better Under Pressure, How Great Leaders Bring Out the Best in Themselves and Others. Justin, if people are listening to the sound of your voice, they like what they hear, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Yeah, it's the Harvard Business Review website. There's video interviews there, blogs there, and they can purchase the book at any outlet,
including Bank of Books right here in Ventura. Two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street, both in Ventura. Justin, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
I appreciate it, Bill.
Thank you. Take care.